Greetings and welcome to the first podcast episode of Empower Her Podcast with Chrississippi. On today's episode, I have special guest, Ms. Latae Davis of Meridian, Mississippi. Latae Davis is a speaker, veteran, and entrepreneur. She has served at the Walter Reed Army Medical Center, the White House Medical Unit, and the Pentagon. As a drill sergeant, during which she trained over 2,000 soldiers, Latae possessed the ability to reach people on their level and guide them to become better versions of themselves. She has been a part of the Democratic Party in her local community and continues to speak on issues affecting women and families. She founded the Brown Collective to create a voice for brown and black leaders. She is an author of 4 books, an incorporator of a 500 content creator, and writer for Work Magazine. So on today's show, I have Miss Latae. Hey, Latae.
Hey, love. How are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
Girl, I am so good and so beautiful outside, and I just want to thank you so much for sharing your platform and allowing you to be on it. So I hope today I can give your guests some really cool information as well as really help them create their 2020 vision for this year.
Yes, because we're in 20 days into 2020, so most definitely.
Oh, man, isn't it symbolic, though, the 20th of 2020?
Yes.
Oh, so I'm just going to manifest out of this, I'm telling you. So, yes, I love that, actually. And it's Martin Luther King. We're observing Martin Luther King today as well, so this is really awesome. This is very awesome.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And today we're going to discuss you, your current project, Body by Tay, and also the film that everybody has been discussing, A Fall from Grace.
Okay. Yeah, I love the Body by Tay. I have my own thoughts on the movie, so y'all don't get too mad at me on my thoughts, but I think it's important for us to really dissect content that, you know, is put out and represents our community. So, I'm excited about both. Thank you so much.
Yes, yes. So, what's been going on?
Well, absolutely everything. It feels like, you know, we were talking earlier about all the tasks we have. And since 2020 came in, I decided not to be kind to myself, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just a message for everyone that is listening. I know 2020 is here, and it's like you're supposed to make things happen, and you need to be grinding and hustling. But if we're kind to ourselves as we operate through our purpose, as we operate through our goals, and we try to achieve those, then we're able to go longer and go harder and go further, right? So I've got Body by Tay, and there's a 14-day challenge coming up on January the 30th. I decided to do that so that we'll be done for Valentine's Day.
Okay. Okay.
Okay, so that hopefully you can fit into that dress just a little bit more. Or, I mean, look, you bring Valentine's Day and you really see some results and you're loving yourself more. We've got the 2020 Vision Program that will launch officially on this Friday, and that's going to discuss money management. I've really worked hard on my credit, talking about fitness, with, of course, with Body by Tay. And then we're also talking about business and being in the process of goal-oriented with our business. It's okay to be in your purpose. It's okay to have the vision. But you need to understand the numbers. You need to understand the data. You need to understand the market. And so that's what the 2020 Vision Business Program, or portion of the program, will discuss. There's probably tons of things that I'm doing that I just habit of doing. But those are the two main things. And of course, Brown Collective Podcast, where I actually invite guests on who are experts in their field. I actually had Marcia Stewart Coleman on, and
oh, wow,
she talked about credit and home ownership, right?
Mm-hmm.
And really busted a lot of myths about home ownership and credit. I also talked with Dominique Broadway, who is a credit repair counselor, and that will be on the podcast. I also talked with Mary Williams. He's in your local area, about just the health issues that women, especially black and brown women, face. So those are some people really dope episodes for you to listen to.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'm loving that, especially with the health, because, you know, you have to take care of yourself. Health is wealth.
Yes, and she even talked about mental health, and I didn't think that she would discuss that, and it was so good. It was so good. The whole interview is amazing. It is so good, I'm telling you. And with Marcia talking about credit and home ownership, I think it was important for us as black and brown folks to pay attention and get out of these habits that are really self-sabotaging.
Yes.
And once you get to a point, right, where your credit, everything is okay, then you can recognize those systemic issues that come into place to stop black and brown folks from having ownership, whether it's in a home, whether it's with bank loans, or whether they give you a loan for that building or whatever. So, we have to kind of work and get ourselves to a certain point so then we can identify what the system is doing so that then we can learn how to circumvent the system. But we got to get to a point first, right? So
yes. You got to start somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm loving that. I'm loving everything you got going on here. So, because today's episode is titled Visionary, and which you are a visionary, what is one way that women can be empowered by your work? And also, how can they too become visionaries in their field or area or, you know, or even their community?
Yeah. I have probably off the top of my head three suggestions. The first suggestion I will give you is that I get it, right? I get that we have connections, we have, I think there's a difference between networks and clicks, okay?
Yes.
And so I think that what happens with a lot of women, especially in our community, is we start operating from clicks and not networks. And so what happens is that if you are right about empowering women, growing women, shifting women, motivating, empowering, you know, inspiring women, if you're operating within a clique, then what's going to happen is there's going to be a lot of women who are going to be shaken out of your system because they don't fit the clique, okay? So we have to understand as women, especially when we're standing in a position where we are going to be trying to pull women into their purpose and pull women into their calling and shake women up so that they can become thousandaires and millionaires, that everyone is not going to look like you. Everyone's story is not going to be the same as yours. Everyone's path is not going to be the same as yours. But truthfully, if you are a visionary woman, a woman who is really after following in your assignment, right? And if you're following in an assignment, then that's a godly thing. That's not a fleshly thing. That's not a secular thing. If you're following your assignment from a godly and spiritual perspective, then it doesn't matter what that woman's story is, because everyone deserves a shift.
Amen.
And everyone is deserving towards the kingdom. So we have to start operating in a network, a true network, and not in a clique, right? The second suggestion I can give is that you have to be bold enough to step out and put yourself in front of people who don't look like you, sound like you, talk like you, dress like you. That's exactly what I did when I applied for the United States of Women Ambassador Program. Back in 2018, I had to get on the phone with Gabriella, and I had to pitch myself, and I killed that thing because I know who I am, right? I know what I bring to the table. And it's sad because I'm the only representative for the state of Mississippi. And yet Mississippi is a low-paying state. We have a high incidence of health issues, right? We definitely, for women, are not represented fairly, and we're not compensated fairly. There are a lot of issues within the state of Mississippi, and so I'm really calling to arms for a lot of women to connect with you or myself so that you can silently, this is not a big vocal rah, rah, rah type of situation, but you need to become a USOW ambassador. Stand up for human trafficking. Stand up for access to quality health care. Stand up for education if your child is a special needs child and they're not receiving the education they should be. Stand up for that and make that, if that's already your platform, now you need to solidify it. And USOW is going to help you do that. And then the third thing that I would say is that, you know, what I've done is I never allowed what it looked like to stop me from keeping moving forward. I don't care what it looks like, I'm going to keep moving. It may look like I'm going to get a no, but until that person tells me no, I'm going to keep going. It may look like I'm not losing the weight, right? Mm-hmm. But then a year later, when I look back at the picture, I've lost some weight, right? So it doesn't matter what it looks like, as long as you have a strategy of faith and you have some, you have the end results in mind, you keep going until you get the no. Ask them why they gave you the no, and then you go back to your plan or your strategy. You readjust and you come back knocking on the door again.
Yes.
Those are my suggestions. Then we're talking about women coming into the space of visionary. I honestly believe that, you know, I get really sensitive about that word because I think sometimes we throw words around so easily. But a visionary to me is a woman who can stand in a room and talk to anybody. There's no preconceived notion. If they are, you push them to the back of your head.
Mm-hmm.
There's no ethic or racial block. You understand what I'm saying? A visionary is going to be able to navigate in any room, talk to anybody, connect with anybody, and then also recognize that she may not be able to get that person to the end the way that she envisions, because this has happened to me where I worked with people and for whatever reason it was a block and I couldn't get them to really take ownership of what they could be, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes other people can see in you more than you can see in yourself. And I could see more in them than they could even imagine, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then I need somebody else to come in, right? I needed Marcia to come in and talk about home ownership and credit. Because for me, I just focused only on my credit. It wasn't an issue of home ownership, but for somebody else it is. So a visionary is someone who's utilizing her resources, calling those people in. Because at the end of the day, my goal as a visionary is to connect with enough people that at the end of whatever that is, their life is a little bit better, right? When I talk to you, you may say, nobody came up and spoke to me but you. When I talk to you, you may say, I've never had to pitch my business and you ask me what I do. And so it's about really listening, right?
Mm-hmm.
More than talking. It's about watching people, right? And seeing what's really going on versus what they're saying.
Yes.
Because that's the only way, I think, that you can take somebody from a place they're used to being in, their comfort zone, or a place that they've kind of been shoved into and they didn't know anything else existed, into the lifestyle and the life that they want to have. And so I think a visionary is really somebody who can really sit down with somebody who can put them up the boat of what it is that they really want and those sabotaging habits that they've had, those negative paradigms, the things that they've been doing for so long, and say, well, we need to shift this. We got to shift this.
Yes.
So that you can get to where you want to go. Everybody can be rich. Everybody can have friends. Everybody can, you can do anything that you want with the mind, but you have to retrain.
Most definitely. And like you said, you know, it's people tend to, that third one actually, that stuck with me, because a lot of times people look at, oh, well, what if they tell me no? You know, and they're thinking like that is the final, like that's the final say so, and it's not. It's not.
Exactly. Just means you need to redraw your map. You know, they may not have been the person that. You know, you think about it, sometimes the no is a blessing, too.
Yes.
So if you wanted a loan for a building, right, and the bank told you no, you don't stop trying to go and get the loan for the building. You just go back to your drawing board, but you never know. That person may have tried, was going to give you a high interest rate, There may be some unethical practices, not to say that there, you know, it could just, it could be a number of things that God was protecting you from with that entity, and then you go somewhere else and you need somebody who not only is going to give you the loan, but also educate you too on how to manage your building, on how to keep your, you know what I'm saying? And
yes,
then you create this relationship. So you just never take that no as a final. It may have been God's protection, actually.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Before we start talking about the movie, which I know you're ready, I have one more question. What would you say to a woman who's looking to find her why?
I would say, find your why. Find your why. What I want you to do is this, okay? And this is an assignment. I want you to look at your schedule. And I want you to look at a time where you have at least an hour and a half to yourself. When I say to yourself, that means hubby's not around, kids aren't around, they ain't around. You don't have to help anybody with any tasks or anything. Now, it may be that you go to the bookstore. You may come to your room. I have like a meditation space, a candle in the room for myself. And I want you to just sit in silence. I want you to sit in silence for at least 5 minutes. That doesn't mean you have to cross your legs, but I mean, like, just sit there in silence. And think about where you come from. Think about where you are. And then I want you to assess what has been holding you back. And I'm talking about, this is some real stuff right here, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about old fears been holding me back. My job. No, let's get down to the nitty gritty of it. What's for real been holding you back? Is it the fact that you hold on to something because of, without it, you don't know who you are? Is it that you really need love? Is it that, you know, you fear losing? I need you to get down to the snot situation of why it is that you feel like you're still trying to figure out what your why is. And the reason I say that is because I don't believe you can discover your why until you look at why you haven't figured out your why, right?
Mm-hmm.
What has been stopping you, right? Is it the pain that, you know, there's so many layers to that, because you may not be working, so that's why you still with your husband, because he's the only one that brings income in, but he reminds you of it every single day. He reminds you that he's the one that brings in the money. Is it the way that somebody constantly has talked to you and told you you'd never be anything, or that's stupid or that's dumb? Is there a dream killer around you? Are you self-sabotaging? You know, people are rooting for you, but because of whatever happened in your life, you can't see those people as positive influences because they're a man or they're too loud or, you know, she's shaped a certain way, and you're not. I mean, there's, you know, we have a lot of different, I think, chambers in our mind on how we assess people and situations.
Yes.
I don't think you'll be able to figure out your why until you figure out what all that other stuff is. Because if you don't handle all that other stuff, then even when you do figure out your why, that other stuff is going to stop you from pursuing your why. Right? If it's low self-esteem, yes. You figured out your why. You figured out that you want to keep on saving about sickle cell disease, maybe, right? But then if you're a part of your why, and part of the reason you never pursued your why was because of lack of body confidence, lack of speech confidence. You didn't think because people, you don't speak well enough. Then even when you figure out your why, if you haven't handled those doorstops or those issues, then you now know what you want to do, but now you're stuck and it's even worse because you know what you want to do and you still can't do it because you're afraid to stand up on the stage and have people judge you for the way you speak or judge you for the way you look. And so I see that a lot in business. That's why I say you got to get your stuff together.
Yes.
Right? Business is great. Sales are amazing. But if you still are dealing with self-hate, if you're mad at women because your husband cheated on you with your best friend, so when you're in a networking event, you can't even really talk to the fly chick that's in the room, that's the social butterfly of the room, she's getting on your nerves and making you sick, because she reminds you of the woman that your husband cheated on you with. It's you got to handle that. Because how are you going to actually network and grow and progress if you're walking around with that kind of anger in you? And it shows in the way that you engage with people. You know, if you don't like people of a different race, if you really don't like them because you got some issues, let's say it's a prison system, right? And you're pissed off about it and you're blaming somebody of the white folks or whomever, and that sits on you. So when you're out and you should be handing out your business card, you're not giving it to anyone that doesn't look like you because you got an issue that you're dealing with. And so we have to figure out a different way to deal with those feelings, those emotions, and those blocks.
Mm-hmm.
So that you can still get out here and operate in your life full out.
Absolutely. Now that is a word. That is word there. Because so many people have it's not necessarily insecurities. Well, I don't know. Would you call it insecurity?
I don't think people look at it as insecurities. I think they see, because see, we get so normalized in our dysfunction.
Yes.
Right? So it's like it's normal. You understand what I'm saying? Like for me, when I was married, I was normalized in always going back and forth with my husband. It was, but guess why I was normal? So, because I saw my mom and my daddy go back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying? So it was normal for me to create friction sometimes where there was no friction, because that's what I had experienced growing up as a young girl. And so what we have to do is we have to say, when we're sitting there for at least 5 minutes and then you journal, right? So you sit there for 5 minutes and then you journal. Because we have to say, why is it that me and my boss can't get along at work? I don't respond well to. I don't respond well to yelling. I don't like unfair work environments. I don't like narcissism. I don't like, why is it? And because it's affecting when you come home. You know, you're irritated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're a negative person at work. You got to really dissect that stuff and say, is this a place that I can continue to function in? What part do I play in it? Yes, we play a part in it. Even if we entertain it or we respond to it, that's our part, right? And
yes.
Then you have to say, what do I need to shift? Because then when you start to shift, and it may take a lot, but it's a concerted effort, but when you start to shift, say I stopped creating this friction with my husband. Well, now he done got into the role of creating friction. Now we need to sit and we need to communicate face to face. We need to talk. Something that we don't often do in our community. If that doesn't work, then we need to go to therapy. Right?
Yes.
If therapy don't work, or we get to the therapy and we realize he just don't want to be married no more. But then guess what? The friction and that drama was covering up some deeper stuff. It's really like, you know, you find a reason to argue about anything, because for real, you kind of feel like you're stressed out about the deal, and you think, you know, one of the partners isn't as invested as the other. But it's really important to really break it down. I'm talking about break that thing down. Break it down. Why can't I do any more episodes of the podcast? What's going on? I got time. I just sit at home. I could have done it. I don't know why I didn't. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that may not be laziness. That may be fear still. It may still be fear. And you're doing something that your family is never podcasting. What's that? So it's new, right? You need a couple of accountability friends that say, girl, you gotta get the podcast done. I'm waiting on the next episode, you know? But you have to have a tribe, too, to push you and encourage
you. Yes. Yes, ma'am. So, I guess we can go on and start shifting over to the topic of the movie. Because everybody been talking about it. People been kind of saying they liked it. Some people said they didn't. So, I kind of want to hear your stance on it. Fall from Grace, which is by another visionary, Tyler Perry, who created films. He purchased a Confederate Army base, which is, I don't know, how like thought-provoking was that, but that is highly thought-provoking to actually purchase some land that, you know, especially at a time where, yes, yes, to, as he say, a land that really wasn't for Negroes and purchased by a Negro.
Yeah.
That I don't know how thought-provoking. I really can't just... It kind of goes back to what you mentioned earlier about removing the things that, you know, I guess that people would be like, oh, I don't think I could do that, you know. He actually just moved forward, and he, I mean, that his studios is the size of the three top studios in the world that record films.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I think Tyler Perry is amazing, right? I think that he's amazing. So the dialogue that I've seen is basically from black women who said, you know, black folks will find a problem with anything, we're never satisfied, let him continue to build his empire while they still talk. I had one friend who said, well, I haven't seen anybody else create or own anything, so you keep going to your, you know, to your job and punching in that clock, your 9-to-5 clock. And my response was, is that now, just consistently, I used to watch Tyler Perry shows all the time, The Have and Have Not, and If Loving You Is Wrong. My issue with If Loving You Is Wrong, and anybody can sit and try to benchmark themselves, is that one thing would drag over a week. It would be one thing, and even in his scenes, they would continually repeat the same dialogue over and over again.
Yes.
and it would just be a bad movie. I mean, that's the beginning of when I stopped watching If Loving You Is Wrong, and then stopped watching The Have and Have Not, because one season will never move from a day, right?
You're right.
That, to me, is unacceptable as a viewer, right? If you compare that to Queen Sugar by Ava DuVernay, where we got a progressive story that moves throughout the season. So yes. When we watched The Fall from Grace, I mentioned that because when we watched The Fall from Grace, it was the same situation. You know, we started with this movie in the beginning, and to be honest with you, we were about to turn it off, because it was dragging, in our perspective. Now, I'm a mother. I've got a 24-year-old and a 19-year-old watching it with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the ending of the movie. However, I do have an issue, and I will stand on this. I have an issue with us as black people being depicted the way that he depicted us in that movie when it comes first to the visual. There is no reason, point blank period, with Tyler Perry being in Black Hollywood, Atlanta, Georgia, for those costumes that look like the hair that look like that. I care less about how you want to show, I'll talk about the character, but the hair, because I was like, wait, is this an 80s movie or is this a modern day movie? And so my thing is, you're in Atlanta, and all you had to do was put a bolo out and say it, no pace, and you still would have had hairstylists, makeup artists come in and do stuff for that movie, because they wanted the bragging rights, and they wanted to be able to add that to their resume. So you didn't even have to pay for folks to come in and help you get the visual correct. And so I mentioned that because people are like, you know, people are never satisfied with anything. And I want to ask my black people, then we need to decide where we're going to stand. Because we've always said that we wanted fair representation on screen and off screen. And if this had been a white filmmaker that had put black actors on the screen looking like that, we would have had a problem with it, and we would have been up in arms, because we would have said that the white filmmaker did not do his or her research. Because we as black folks don't look like that today.
Correct.
And so my thing is, as a black director, as a black billionaire, someone whose studio is in Georgia, there's a responsibility that he has to represent us fairly and accurately. And I don't care how much money Tyler Perry has, he's an amazing visionary, yes. But that does not mean that we still should not be represented fairly. The other thing is that as a woman in her 40s, there is nothing that I see in that man that would make me say, ooh, I just couldn't. Because he was greasy, his hair was not on point, he had on too much stuff. Now, I know there are some weak women out here that are women who like different things, but there was nothing about that man. At my age, this the female character has gotten divorced after 20 years. See, my thing is that today, women are settled, men are settled. But see, you've got such a voice and so many opinions on the internet and so much stuff going on that at some point we do a self-evaluation.
Exactly.
Sis, really? Come on now. Yeah. So my thing is, if that's not the dude that I would be attracted to as a middle-aged woman, because even if I left my husband in 20 years, I think that that was false. Let me tell you something. Today, now, maybe back in the day, a woman would have left her husband after 20 years and said, just give me my name. When I divorced my husband, all I wanted was my name. But guess what? We didn't have any property together. We didn't have a home together. Right? So, My thing is, after 20 years, and you're in your mid-40s, ain't no way we're going to continue. You were going to give me something. So, if you pay attention to the lead female character, that's the same way she acts on the have and have not. The mother to seek or something. She's that same way. She is the matriarch. She always, I'll go stay in a hotel before I stay in this house. But she, you know, was spent out on her money. It's whatever that is, right? But she even brought that over into this movie. So we recognize that immediately. Me and my daughters are being watching the movie. So it's like, what range does that actress have? Because I'm not leaving a marriage for 20 years in that. And you left me for your secretary.
Exactly.
And I'm older than 45. Oh, baby, no. This ain't starting over. I mean, you 20 of my best years. You understand me? I'm not starting over. We're going to bust down these assets. And that's not money that this is the least that you could do. So I think that for me, the movie was written, of course, from Tyler's perspective, because he writes all his own content.
Mm-hmm.
And so the issue with that, though, is if you're writing all your own content, which is amazing, in today's world, if you're writing it just from your perspective, it may not be as accurate as it can be because that's your lens. And I wonder how true of a representation we're getting if nobody else is invited in the room to write. Because I'm going to tell you, if you had asked a woman to come in that room and help you write that script, a young girl, a young new writer to come in and edit that script with you, a dude. Because, I mean, I'm going to be honest. Me and my daughter talked about this too. She had a son. And that man refused to leave. That man had another chick up in her house.
That's one call away.
What mama you know? Come on, let's keep this 100.
Mm-hmm.
What mama you know ain't fixing to call her son?
Exactly. That's a one call away.
What? What mama ain't fixing to call her son? Who the son is probably around the same age as her boy, and say he won't leave. That's all you gotta say.
Mm-hmm.
I call my brother and say a dude won't leave. What? It's on. I mean, come on. The cavalry is coming. Well, there's one. Well, my brother's probably going to be 05. I think they got doppelgangers. So, I mean, I'm just saying, if that was not realistic, you got a whole son that she never called. That she never said, come on. And I ain't saying you called your son or your brothers or whatever to get some popping. That ain't what I'm saying. But now, at the point where that man is having sex with another female in her home, and slammed the door in her face, oh baby, it's one call, that's all. It's one call, that's all. But I think if you had have had somebody else at the table to help write, then that would have came into play. And so I the movie was okay, right? It picked up at near the end. Me and my daughter had said we saw Felicia Rashad, and we'd like to see her as a bad person one time. And it was so funny because at a point we said, that's it. I will be a forward, but once we saw her reaction, we knew it was something different. And people saying this was his greatest work. And I think the other question would be, they shot this movie in 5 days, right? The same way they shot the movie that Taraji was in. They shot the movie in 5 days. So, you know, the Confessions of a Marriage Counselor movie with Journey Smollett, if you haven't watched that movie, it is absolutely amazing. Journey Smollett, Lance Rose, I think he's from Sarnia, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
That movie,
I saw that one.
So darn good. Yeah, that movie is so darn good. But his budget was more. And so I wonder if, just for argument's sake, if when he was trying to be when he wanted to get into the room of a more diverse leadership, when he wanted white, the white directors and filmmakers to see him as a valid content creator, movie maker,
mm-hmm.
he was putting out really great movies where the quality was different, right?
Yeah.
You know, now he's shooting movies in 5 days and they're dark. I mean, if you really compare his earlier movies to these movies that he's put out lately, I don't see the same attention to detail. I don't see the same visual effects, right? And so you have to wonder if, once he said he knew that white America would never accept him, or that the white filmmakers would never accept him, so he built his own, which is definitely commendable. Did he then say, well, my consumer is this demographic, and so this is what I can give them, and they'll still accept it? It's unacceptable, even the way that he lived. Yeah, now, if the movie's in the 80s, that's one thing. This movie was not in the 80s because the lawyer said it was late. Okay?
Yes.
So, no, that this is not. And I think this idea of the black woman being angry, being volatile, being this woe is me, until you just push. I think I'm honestly tired of it. I'm tired of that being the basis for a lot of the content. Because there's some bad chicks out here now.
Yeah.
You understand me? There's some bad chicks in the tribe now. You feel what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Us sisters, us women, baby, even if we had dealt with our boy, we would have never got to the point of marriage, because we would have treated him as he presented himself. Now, all these butter light flies, whatever you call them,
fireflies.
All of that stuff. All of that stuff is cute, right? It's cute, but I just, you know, it's egregious for me. And that haircut, I think.
Mm-mm.
I mean, people are like, y'all so picky. No, you know, good as I damn well, you did not talk to no dude that looked like this.
Mm-mm.
He had to get some of the grease off of him. He looked like a player. Like.
Yeah. And I mean, the way he even presented himself, because I'm almost 30, and I'm sitting here like, even if he was my age, I still wouldn't have talked to him, because it was like he, for one, I was kind of confused. I honestly thought he was a metrosexual. I'm not even going to lie. I honestly thought, you know, he didn't like women. I thought it was going to be one of those, one of his atypicals, where the guy was on the DL. I'm not going to lie.
Uh-huh.
But then he became a Joanna scammer. He stole the credit card information and all that stuff. And I'm like, okay, so he be scamming women. Okay. But do he like men or do he like women? Because it was kind of still the way he dressed, the way he presented himself. I mean, and who asked for an ashtray? Just sprinkle it on the floor. Just sprinkle it on the floor.
It's almost like he was back in the 80s. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because really, to be honest with you, a dude like him would have gave the bag about an ashtray. He would have put the ashes on the floor.
Yeah.
And he can't clean it. I mean, I'm just saying, real talk. Right?
Yeah.
Real talk. And I think, too, this idea of the middle-aged woman, where he said, you low-hanging fruit. Let me tell you something. See, us middle-aged women, baby, we bad. Okay? We playing no games. Like, I'm in my 40s. Now, I would never date a man that young. Why? Because, see, I don't believe in dating younger men like that because I got daughters, 24, 19. And so you got to, but the thing is, when I say that is, I don't date young guys. But I recognize just from a health perspective, that's why I started working out. It wasn't about me trying to grab or catch the eye of nobody. I didn't even think about that. It was my blood pressure was so high. My hands were swelling. So I went to the gym initially because of my health. But then I'm like, you know what? I was a drill sergeant. I was slim. And I ate clean after I got out of the military. And I had lost weight. But that wasn't the goal. So I didn't see that as, woo, now I'm ready. But I guess my point is that we ain't got time. I don't even, girl, and then the fact that she's sitting on that phone with that man going to sleep on the phone, baby, we don't do that no more. We don't do that no more. And I'm talking about you can be fine, fine, fine. See, if you're really fine like that and I'm really feeling you like that, then we're going to be in each other's face.
Exactly.
You feel me? And we're going to be texting. You understand what I'm saying? Just sitting on the phone, talking, don't nobody really do that no more. Like, because to be honest, we're too busy. Like, I'll text you, because then I could be working on some other stuff, or I could be working out at the gym, and I still can text you. Correct. Come on, sitting on the phone with you. This young grown woman falling asleep at work and in meetings. Come on now, bitch.
Yeah. Come on. I mean, it'll be different if, you know, and then he didn't even have his own place. Now that was raggedy. That was raggedy there. That was raggedy.
So that the story came from, it feels like me, and it's not like the story is far-fetched. Absolutely not. Right? Mm-mm. It's not like you don't. Somebody can't say, "Oh, I'm gonna look at this woman," because I will say that as a cautionary tale for middle-aged women. We do have to be mindful of why it is that somebody wants to talk to you, especially if they're younger. Because you already settled, you probably getting some kind of money of some sort. You do have to get, look, that's why I don't talk, you know, and you have to be cautionary whether they're young, your age or not. But I'm wondering, this just seems like it was written from an older time period perspective.
Yeah.
Because even me as a woman in my 40s, I just don't have time to sit on the phone with you and talk to you. I really don't. It's just so much going on. I don't.
Yeah.
You got to get past. See, they got married. She got a son. See, for me to get married again, that dude would have to go through my daughter. You understand what I'm saying?
Exactly.
They're gonna have to go through the door with my daughter, and you're gonna have to get the approval from my daughter while I'm dating you, and then if you wanted to marry me before you could even ask me, like I'm just especially as a single mother. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's just so where was the son in that whole situation? Even with the thing,
He came out kind of passive a little bit.
But I think that's because Tyler wrote him that way. Because I'm going to be honest. I think I don't care how much of a mama's boy a man is, how he may have a softer feminine trait than male traits, you know, and he may not be that vocal, loud person. But I can guarantee you, I don't care what kind of son you have, you always going to be, he always going to love mama.
It's kind of funny because the way he writes Hannah and her son's relationship on Haves and Have Nots, you would think he would have transferred that same energy on this guy and his mom.
And you know,
Because, you know, he...
I think that he diluted the son's positioning and power in that. I think it was just kind of maybe this idea of the woman doesn't have anywhere to turn. This man won't leave. He just took all her money.
Mm-hmm.
And she don't have anywhere to turn. But this woman really did it. And, I mean, I'm going to be honest. If you by yourself and you don't have nobody, I'm going to tell you, you got people at your job. You know, you got somebody in your neighborhood. Like me and my neighbor, we cool. We cool as all get out. Mm-hmm. Let me go over there and tell him that this dude won't leave.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we done lived by each other for over 10 years. He done seen my girls for it. Let me go and tell him this dude won't leave. Now, if nothing else, he gonna walk over here and say, hey, homie, let me talk to you for a minute. Let me talk to you for a minute. Now, we ain't never had no problems over here. I mean, maybe you just need to go on ahead and, you know, go on to your career for a little bit, let y'all cool off. She wants you to leave, man. So, I mean, you need to go and leave.
Yes.
Yeah.
Something. I mean...
So, I ain't shooting the movie down, but I think that it's just in this day and age to represent just a visual. Her hair all over her head. Look, Centoya Brown had a split. I saw my daughter. I said, Centoya Brown, every interview had her ponytail split back. And they had sentenced that girl to life. She looked, and it's real. And
yes.
She was in prison.
Yes.
But you never saw that woman, that young lady, with her hair all over her head.
Mm-mm.
Come on, man. I don't sweat it. Acting like she done lost her mind. You might be in, oh, my God, what's going on? But this, come on. Look like they just flipped the wig and turned it around where the back was in the front. I think it's just a representation of us as black folk. And I think you just have to be, if again, I bet you he wouldn't show up to no Oscar award show looking like that, would he?
Oh, no. Oh, no.
So stop representing us like that. Stop it. Now stop it. That lady was getting on my nerves. I said, look, you got somebody. Look, even a younger girl would have said, oh, you don't want to let your ass. I'm sorry. Some girls be giving us life. I'd be like, Miss Patricia, I'm going to show you how to wear it even better. Girl, what's your opinion? Show me. This ain't the old wig. That wig's the old Miss Patricia. You need one that's got real good stuff. I'm just saying, like, stop it.
Yeah.
But I get it. I mean, she's not, this is the older, the character, I know, was not all into all of that stuff, but I'm just like, come on now. Those high top fade.
The sad part was it was a high top fade, but it wasn't even. I don't know what he had going on. It looked like it was way more hair up there than anything.
The box at the back. I'm like, what? Oh, Lord. Could the dude not have had like natural hair and it was just twisted up? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, I was looking at Power and looking at Rotini's hair, and I thought, oh, that's what they were going for, but they didn't accomplish it. Rotini's head tight. You know, he got a little fade on the side of his time.
Yeah.
But that's what they were going for. But, look, I'm just saying, I'm a staunch we just need to be represented correctly. Mr. Tyler Perry, I love your work. Yes, sir, I do. I know it may not sound like it. I do like your work. But as a visionary, remember what I said, as a visionary, you pull people in and you empower them, right, to become better versions of themselves.
Yes.
How many writers would love to be in that room, but he writes all his own stuff?
Yeah. Yeah, because
so is he really a visionary? Is he really, has he come out of his own comfort zone? If you don't have any other writers in that room, it's because you want the story to be told how you want it to be told, and you don't want nobody else's perspective. You just want them to act out what is put on paper, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you're representing the black and brown community, the stories are so intertwined and they're so... Like, if you look at Queen Sugar, and you look at the way, all Ralph Angel and all of those stories are like separate but intertwined.
Yes.
Right? And you see how he's dealing with being a single parent and a baby's mother. You know, the other sister, well, husband, infidelity, and she's this gorgeous woman, but her husband is, I mean, the son in the midst of that. And I mean, it's like all of these stories have so many layers. Do we really get the layers? When is the last time we saw some work, body of work, where we got the layers? Can you say anything of that mm-hmm. person? And really understood why and how they've become who they are. I don't think he even does that well on having have my brother is wrong. Well, but I mean, you know, you have to then look and say the visionary is in the act, but is it in the inclusivity? Right? So if you're a visionary because you took the Confederate Army base and made it into one of the largest studios, that yeah, but you know, you in that aspect, but as far as inclusivity, you know, people had issues with that because they were like, you know, you write about black women or women, but mainly black women. Medea was a woman, but yet there are no women writers invited in the book. So that all the stories are being told from a male perspective and maybe from what we've seen and heard. But us women, we're going through a lot. I guarantee you that it would be really dope for him to even have an internship where he allowed some interns to create a script based on X. I bet it'd be dope.
Yes. That would be a really good idea, honestly.
Yeah.
To kind of...
Let them come in, write the script. You know, you don't have to write it. There's so many nuances in that. I mean, you know, I don't think the LGBTQ community has been represented in any work, I don't think.
I think he just, I think he was just a part of like a director or something.
Yeah.
Because the book, you know, it follows with the book.
Yes. Yes. And so I don't think the LGBTQ community has been represented. I don't know if I've ever, I think just John Q, I don't think he was a part of that movie either. So I really haven't seen a movie where there's a black family, right, that where there's no violence between the couples. It's just this true story about the American dream, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I've seen a movie where the black woman teaches a man throughout that movie how she wants to be treated. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, he's used to being a player. It doesn't all, I don't know. You know, I think that he got close to that in the mayor's council with Lance Rose, but I think there's just so many different stories, I really do, that aren't being touched on. So.
Yeah. We ain't coming for you, Mr. Tyler, but we're asking if you could kind of shift the narrative a little bit to some reality things, because you know you think about shows like, well, I'll talk about the TV show, for example. You think about A Different World, and of course, Bill wrote it at a time where HBCUs, and I mean I even watch it. So many people were in tune with it. They were like, okay, you can watch A Different World. And I mean, it looks like reality. I mean, you go to HBCU today, you still got your Wheatleys, you still got your Kims, you still got your Freddies, you still have these characters. And it's real. The situations are real. I think they
want to go to college.
Yes.
I mean, it was true depiction of college life from all of these different lenses of people who were so different, but at the same time, a lot alike. And like you said, it was Bill Cosby, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's older, and he, you know, but he recognized, I think, too, the talent
mm-hmm.
and the way that they could take those characters and shape them. Jasmine Guy shaping Whitley the way she did, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When you say that, I think of the colors and the styles and the clothes, and
mm-hmm.
nothing ever really matched except for Whitley's car. And it was, and so I think really the true sentiment that I have is represent us accurately. If you're going to do a current time piece of work, body of work, represent us accurately in the current time, right?
Yes.
Represent us accurately. Because, I mean, I don't know what woman hasn't learned from a dude that looked like that, but that ain't good. You know what I'm saying? It ain't good, but now, you know, you got some smooth toppers, but I guess, and you don't have to be thin, and he didn't have to be dressed all night, but
mm-hmm.
I guess maybe I'm talking to from my own experience, but child, that ain't nothing for trouble. I think there could have been a little bit more nuance with it. But, you know, people say, hey, well, you don't have the money. He's a millionaire. Y'all just talking. You know, get up and own your own stuff. And I'm thinking, well, you know, with him being a billionaire and having all of that, then I'm pretty sure that he does have, hopefully, you know, he would have some kind of platform for young writers. I don't think that he would not, you know, but King of Reads, which is my boo, he's on YouTube. King of Reads is out of Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And he gives an opinion on that, on the Confederate base. And basically what he said is that Tyler Perry built that studio there, but it's the catalyst for gentrification.
Hmm.
So although that studio is built in what was or is a low-income or, you know, more black neighborhood, that when he built that studio, what it's going to cause is for people to come in and push those lower-income folks or those people, you know, those people that were there with a certain income, push them out because it's going to end up building that area up, right? And that's usually mm-hmm. why people, corporations want or cities want a corporation to come in. So, you know, if you built a Google studio there, a Google office there, then, you know, anybody that was probably living there that made $30,000 or below, they're going to end up being pushed out. Because now Google, there's going to be developers then that come there who are probably going to build apartment buildings and other stuff and probably a Target and other stuff because they want to increase the value of their real estate there because Google coming and building a building there already increased the value of that real estate. So gentrification starts to happen, and so that's what he said is now happening around the city.
Mm.
I thought that was interesting, knowing that he lives in the area that he's like, I'm seeing it happen. So, you know, it's kind of like then you're displacing the people that are your demographic, and then you'll have, you know, it's interesting. Actually, I think that that's another perspective of looking at it and, you know, kind of displacing the same people that you're creating your content for. So. Y'all go follow King of Reed, TV Reed, and he's telling the truth, so that's my boo. He really does. He talks and he shares his opinion. Sometimes I don't agree. Mm-hmm. But the cool thing about it is that, you know, he did speak on that, and I was like, I never thought about that. I never looked at it that way, and that was a good point that he made.
Hmm. That's an interesting perspective.
Yeah.
Very, very interesting perspective. Well, we, you know, kind of talked about the show. We talked about you. And before we pretty much close out, let's discuss some final words of empowerment. I actually wrote down the three tips that you had gave, which was one, to work for networks and not clicks, or work from networks and not clicks. Be bold enough to stand before people that doesn't look like you, and to never allow what it may look like to stop moving forward.
All right. That's right? And you know, we are, you know, when we sit on the end, when we sit in front of our computers and we watch people from different parts of the country, right? And you say, dang, I wish I could talk as clearly as she talks, or dang, I wish I had the house that she has or the car that she has. I think we have to realize, especially, you know, if you're from the South, is that we just have our own special sauce. Don't feel like your dialect is, you know, I was judging myself at one point. I was like, man, I sound country, but that's because I've been in the North for so long. And so I kind of picked up on their dialect. But the thing about us women from the South is that, you know, we love you, you know, we'll feed you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's just something special about the way we interroom. And so even if you go to Washington, D.C. or California and you're in the room, don't be afraid to show up authentically as who you are, you know, because trust me, there's nobody else. There's going to be very few women in that room just like you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's your power. And instead of feeling like there's nobody else in here who sounds like me, talks like me, and I'm going to push back and become a part of the wallpaper, why would you do that? Because we understand that visibility means giving people something that they normally have not seen. And so we, especially as Southern women, we have our charm. And we and just remember, you attract more bees with honey than you do with vinegar. So whatever preconceived thoughts or ideas that you have, keep those to yourself, because you have a mission. You have a goal. And so we have to understand that we're not going to meet people that we want to invite over to our house and have kiki with. Every person you meet, you're not going to want to kiki with. That mm-hmm. does not mean that person cannot be a part of your network, right? That person cannot still add value, and that's where we're making the mistake at. If I can't kiki with you, then, girl, I don't know, I might not call you back. You don't have to kiki with everybody.
Exactly.
You may not be a kikier. You know what I mean? It's always like, but that doesn't mean that she ain't the one that can get you the deal, that can get the call. You may not need a kikier when you're trying to get on the news for an interview. You may need somebody that's about that business and knows how to talk to those folks and say, okay, and book that date. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? You might not need a kikier. You know, so you really open up your mind and understand that you are special, you are unique, and when you step in the room, honey, it's not going to be too many like you, baby. It's not a lot of Southern bells out there, honey, so, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have to drop our little red velvet and cream cheese frosting whatever we can, and then serve them a little sweet tea. You know, they, honey, they're our friends for life after that.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Well, I thank you, Miss Latay, for being a part of my first episode.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
So I'll share with everybody how they can keep up with me, y'all.
Okay.
Follow me on Instagram at Latay Davis. You have the Gold Global Girls Instagram as well, and that one's just going to be interviews, live interview based. And then make sure that you go and follow the Body Size page, Facebook page, as well as the Instagram page. And our 14-day challenge will start. It is a beginner challenge. I just need you to get up out of the seat, and that's what I'm going to help you do.
Okay.
Also, check out my website, www.latayedavis.com, where you can check out more about the 2020 Vision Program.
Okay. What I will do for the listeners is put it in the show notes so that they can visit the website and visit your social media, as well as the 3 points that you gave, because I think they need to see that written out.
Yeah. Yep. Congratulations, sis.
Thank you.
By the end of the year, I'm like, look at Christy. You're getting S-Y-N-Z all up on the podcast, honey, and I definitely will share it out. You've done great. You're going to do amazing. Congratulations on following your heart.
That's so important. Thanks. So, also, people can follow the Empower Her podcast on Instagram as well as Facebook to keep up with the show. We're done with the first episode. Thank you.
Y'all make sure y'all share it out. Let's get some conversation started. Y'all don't agree with my take on the little movie Fall from Grace, go ahead and let me have it. have it.
Don't be too hard now.
Let's talk about it. Thank you so much, Christy.
All right, you're welcome.